I'm Risa Williams, and this is the Motivation Mindset, your productivity podcast. Today, we have a special episode of the show called The Daily Tune-Up, where Stevan Lewis, a therapist and author, will join me as guest co-host to help you tune up your daily mindset and feel more motivated. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm so excited today to be joined again by the wonderful Stevan Lewis. So welcome, Stevan, to the show.
Thanks, Risa, for having me back. I love talking about communication.
I know you do. I do, too. I like to think about the words we use and how important it is. I think it's because I started as a writer. And when you start off in the world of writing, you're always trying to think of the way people say things, you know, and how do specific people say certain things compared to other people. And you're just thinking about dialogue a lot. And then that translates over into therapy pretty well, because you see where people get into traps when they are using words that may or may not be communicating exactly what they mean to other people.
That is so, so key. Like, not having been a writer, but I think, you know, going to school to be a therapist, you learn, hopefully people are learning how to communicate properly. But there's this thing of like, I think my fascination comes from when people engage in discourse and they aren't getting the outcomes they want, and how they often will create these kind of narratives about what they've heard. And then they operate based on that. And that's the stuff that's fascinating to me, because it's like, I remember when I used to do couples counseling, it's sitting in a room with two other people and then watching them have a conversation and them reacting in ways. And I'm like, well, what did you hear? Because that's not exactly what I heard.
When people are triggered, they kind of cherry pick what they're hearing, or they put an overlay, like a filter on top of it. And that's so interesting.
And I think that's the part like where people really go wrong, is like the hearing words effectively, that people, it's a simple thing I think people could do to kind of circumvent a lot of arguments, is just to kind of ask the question, hey, when you said this, is this what you meant?
Right.
Don't do that. They don't do that simple questioning. Like, they just take, oh, you said it. And then like, and they're all down the road.
and they're mad.
Yeah, 100%.
So give me an example from couples therapy.
It usually comes like when someone critiques another person. And it's, oh, gosh, like the sentence or the language is like just filled with all the don'ts of like communication. So, oh, you do X, like, you know, you always leave your dishes in the sink, even though I've asked you not to, kind of thing. And it's like,
going to get a good reaction, no matter what you say. Ever. It's not going to, unless you're always a wonderful person, maybe that one, but that's usually how it's being used.
It's not being used like that at all. And so it's like, well, you made this absolute thing. And so there's no reprieve from that, because you not noticed if they have done that thing, right? They've like put their dish away. There's no compliment for that. There's no praise for it. It's just the only times you remember is when they didn't do it. And so this sets up a situation where it's hard to kind of win.
It's that black and white thinking of all or nothing. Like, it's always this. It's never this. And there's no gray area. And once you communicate that to someone, like, you're always late, they're automatically on the defensive, because that's impossible. It's impossible to be always late, right? At some point, you're not going to be late, right?
Exactly.
So it triggers that reaction.
It does, right? And like, there's no opportunity for me to be successful then if I'm on the receiving end of that. Like, I really got into like language and linguistics when I read some of Deborah Tannen's books. Mm-hmm. Deborah Tannen's a linguist out of Georgetown University, real famous. She talks about like men and women in communication and like couples. And so she talks about like how they communicate differently. And so like for her, she came up with this concept that I really liked, of like the message versus the meta message.
Right.
And I see this as being like the major problem with communication, is that human beings will say a question or make a statement, but like the meaning behind that statement is the true kind of message they're trying to communicate, which is the meta message. So as an example, you know, I might say, hey, you know, to like my wife or something, like, do you like my beard? Does it look shaped nice? Like, is it shaped and cut correctly? And she's like, oh, well, you know, this spot is like not even with this other side. And like, that's the message I sent. The meta message is, do you find me attractive? And so like when she says, well, it's a little off, now I'm like, oh, she doesn't think I'm attractive. I'm not handsome to her. Like all this stuff goes on in my head. And I think that's what people do is that they say things when they really mean another thing. And so they operate off of this other thing they meant that they didn't ever verbalize.
Right. And it's all these little micro communications that add up to bigger emotions where someone's really grumpy at the end of the day. Maybe that kind of plays into it. Our meta messages add up to big feelings.
No, I agree. I think that's exactly what's happening. And I don't know, like, where I place more of the, maybe that's not even a fair way to do it, like more of the blame. Is it like on the sender of the message or the receiver? But like, you know, I think both have an opportunity to kind of check stuff out. Is like, if you're the sender of the message and you're not getting a response you want, then maybe you got to say, like, you know, inquire with the person, like, hey, what are you hearing when I ask you this? Because this is what I mean from it. Or like the person receiving the message is like, hey, I see you're getting kind of frustrated, or you keep asking me about this stuff. Like, what is it that you're wanting right now? But no one takes the time to do that because we get kind of lost in our own world. And it's so bananas that we do this because it's not even just like with couples. It happens at work with like supervisors or coworkers, or have supervisees, and it's you not taking the time. And I think that's the problem with like communication is people don't want to slow it down enough for it to be effective, right? Like I use the analogy like in my sessions about tennis, like, you know, that's how communication happens. You lob something over, volley something over to someone, they hit it back, you hit it back to them. And like, you know, that's how we keep going, but people don't want to slow down to do the work that it takes to have like really good, effective communication.
That's so true. And often we don't want to step out of the dynamic we've created where we don't pull back as an observer and say, how do I shift this dynamic? It's not working the way it is right now. I'm not getting the reaction I want. How do I shift things? What approach do I take? It's that mental flexibility of trying a new approach or trying to be more gentle in our speech or any of those tools. Mm-hmm. Often it's a very subtle thing you do that changes the whole dynamic. It's just how am I phrasing that question? Am I using those words, you know, the danger words, the always, never, you could have, you should have, why haven't you? You know, you used to. These types of harsh words are pretty much always going to trigger a harsh reaction in people. Another one that I learned because I got interested in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which is similar to what Deborah Tannen talks about, which is how do we use words to get what we want by softening them and avoiding certain words that trigger reactions. So one of the main ones that everyone talks about is but. Right. Like, you're so creative, but you're a mess. All they're going to hear is you're a mess. They're not going to hear you're creative. So if you want to erase something you've just said, use the word but, and it's like magic. No one will hear anything.
And it's used so frequently, like in our language and interactions with people, like you say but for everything. And it's like, well, that took away everything you said that was positive.
I know.
You know, we try to teach and, you know, like to use and instead of but so that two things can be possible and true. But it's an interesting thing because like I love what you're saying, because when we talk about words and communication, adjectives are like your friend or your enemy. And
it's so true.
They're like the reality of the situation. And I think you probably find this true, you know, kind of in the work you do as well, is that people kind of attach to the feeling they're having and then they use adjectives based on that feeling.
Right, right. So they double down on feeling like it's a fact. And then their adjectives become very strong and intense as a result.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, someone's upset and like they feel bad and someone's upset with them. And so they're like, oh, you hate me. And it's like, well, wait, did they ever say that? Like,
we go right to hate, like the most extreme word. So-and-so 100%. Didn't text me back in 5 minutes. Oh, they hate me.
Yeah.
Why? Yes. Why do we go to the most extreme thing?
Well, I don't know. Like, I've been trying to, if I figure that out, like, I'm going to be like the wealthiest man on earth. Like, if I could find
something
the answer
in our brains, like our human brains will just exaggerate and go to an extreme harsh place when we feel an intense emotion somehow.
And like the super, like, you know, like the major problem behind that is the fact that like we aren't really conscious of that word choice because it just kind of rolls off the tongue. Like, something happens. You know, I'm late and I'm late because my car didn't start. The day is terrible. You know, this sucks. Like everything is all screwed up. And it's like, is everything screwed up? is the day ruined because it didn't go or start the way you wanted it to? Like, right. There are a lot of other things that could happen that could, you know, actually make something terrible. Like, maybe we temper the words we use to kind of say, like, okay, the day didn't start the way I wanted to. That's a fair statement. I can agree with you like that. I don't know that your whole day's ruined. We haven't even gotten to the end of it. Like, after your car didn't start. And so, like, you missed a major accident. And then, like, what if, like, you get to work and they're like, hey, we want to give you a promotion. I don't know that your day's still bad. Like, it's actually pretty good.
Right. Like, the timeline is still going.
Yeah.
And there's a million events that can happen that will change the timeline. Like, if we see it like that, it's not like, I think that goes back to what you and I have discussed before in the show, which is people are altogether too willing to condemn people and things and just events, right? Yeah. We just condemn it. We judge it so harshly based on little bits of information.
Yeah.
So how do we stop ourselves from condemning something? Like you said, like you wake up, something happens, you spill your coffee. Oh, this day is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Mondays are the worst. We say these things. And unfortunately, as we've talked about before, our brain doesn't know we're being dramatic. It just says, oh, you're stressed out. Here's some stress to feel. Here's stress hormones. Here's that feeling to match what you're saying.
Yep. And I think what needs to happen is that people need to be a little bit more present and kind of in the moment. And I think, like, when we use language that predicts how the future is going or defines what everything is now, or like the entirety of a day, or, you know, a longer term, then it messes us up as opposed to kind of using language that suggests, here's what happened right now. Like, I spilled my coffee. That sucks. As right. opposed to like, oh, I spilled my coffee. I'm always screwing things up. Like, don't go to that place where you're like now catastrophizing and taking it, you know, to another level to mean more than what it is. Okay, you spilled a cup of coffee. Is that something that people often do? Probably. Human beings aren't perfect. You can spill a cup of coffee. Also, you can clean that up right. and get another one. Like, it's okay. Like, this is like this,
you're gonna this be okay in about 5 minutes.
Solved. Exactly. Like, there is a way to reprieve from this. Like, we can recover from this. You don't have to be stuck in like, well, now I can't have coffee because, like, you know, it's all I do is spill it. Like, that's not how it really works.
I'm giving up coffee forever.
Yeah. You don't need it. What? Coffee did nothing to you. You made a mistake. And I think that's the problem, is people don't really factor imperfection into kind of like their daily functioning.
Yeah. And when you're describing it, it sounds like just the facts. And that's a phrase I use a lot. It's like, just the facts. It's like from Dragnet, the old TV show.
Yeah.
They always say, just the facts, ma'am. Like, can I say just the facts to myself? Because nobody's saying you have to feel great when you spill coffee all over yourself. Like, we're not saying, oh, you have to spin it into a positive thing. Mm-hmm. It's more just acknowledging, yeah, I hate when this happens. And then how do I move on? Like, how do I get myself back on track again?
Yeah.
It doesn't tank my entire mood for the
100%.
Day.
Like, the other thing I like to do is kind of have people scale things. So, like, what I mean is, you know, here's my belief. I think that it takes a lot of bad or imperfections before something becomes universally or objectively bad. Right. Like,
yeah.
It's not one thing usually. Like, sure, it could be one great thing and that will like ruin your day. Like, if, you know, my dog died, like, okay, that day is probably not going to be great because this thing happened. But for most things, it takes a lot to move it away from this is still objectively good. And so, like, trying to get people to scale something of like, hey, is this in a grade, like a range of still good? And so, like, I use the analogy of, you know, if you're getting a grade, if you get a 90 on a test and if you get 100, both of those are an A.
And so
what people have decided is that in that range, all of these grades are the same, no matter how much, like how far from perfection.
Right. It's automatically so like, an F.
Yeah,
the day.
Exactly. So like if you got 199, like that's a lot of numbers to move and you still got the same grade as everybody else who got in that range. Where are you kind of grading yourself or scaling like how you're performing on that in that moment or on that day?
I like that. And then even over the course of a semester, if we're thinking of this analogy, can get one F on an assignment and still pull it together.
Next
day, there's always this feeling like, oh, the whole week is ruined now. But tomorrow you're starting from scratch. Your brain is resetting. You know, you don't have to feed it the same stress level again.
Exactly. Like, you know how and I don't want to say like this to like, you know, because school can be difficult for people, like, but you know how bad you have to kind of do, or like how much you have to like not perform in order to like not pass a class, like with a C or something, you know, like when you said during the semester.
You have to not show up.
Yeah, like you pretty much really, like have to not try.
Yeah.
Like you have to like, well, actually you have to try to not like pass. Like that's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to not be sitting in a seat for most of the semester.
For sure. That's like the only way, right? Like, because there's so many other opportunities to kind of, you know, pass the course. And so I think people forget about or don't pay attention to the good enough. And that's really problematic.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to bring up, which is we tend to tell people what we don't want versus what we do want. So an example of this that often comes up for parents would be like, don't slam the door when you leave the room. They're gonna slam the door. The second you say that, you've automatically programmed someone to slam the door. The next thing you hear is stomp, 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 slam. So one thing they teach you with neuro-linguistic programming is to say, when you leave the room, could you please shut the door quietly? Because now we've changed it to what do I want versus what I don't want. And somehow using the word don't do such and such will often trigger people to do exactly that.
Yeah. And I think even kind of like when thinking about that phrase of like, don't slam the door, it in there is like a little bit of judgment. It's saying they're doing it intentionally. Like
this they're going to do it. Yeah, yeah. And also like future predicting. Like, yeah, I know what's in your head right now. You're going to say, and they're like, okay, I'm going to do it.
Exactly.
So in a weird way, we've accidentally programmed someone to do exactly what we don't want them to do.
Right, right. And so I like that positive spin on it of like saying what you want. Like when you were saying that, it made me think about, you know, like kind of trying to decide what to eat. You know, like and people was like, well, what do you want to eat? Well, I don't want Italian. I don't think I want a burger. It's like, well, that's good because you're telling me all this stuff that you did not want. That still does not help us get to the place.
We, we have not picked a restaurant. We could stay on this list forever and never eat dinner.
Right. It's like, well, what do you like? You know, and it's like, that's what.
Isn't that the problem, though? People just don't know what they want sometimes. Right, and I think that's where the miscommunication comes in. They're stalling for time because they don't know what they want. They want you to tell them what they want.
And that would be great communication, right? Like that's, I guess that's my thing is like, just communicate what is for you. And so like, if I don't know what I want, just say, I'm hungry, but I really don't know what I want. That's good. I can have compassion for that. Cause you know what? I've been there too before. I'm like, I know I need to eat. My stomach is saying, hey, Stevon, you got to put some food in it. Also, I don't know what food I want to put in there.
I'm confused from hunger.
Yeah, I can empathize with that, right? Like, and then we can start processing.
And we can work with that. Like that statement we can work with. We can say, okay, I'll just pick and you'll just go along with it. And then we're done.
And what you get, though, is like, well, I don't know, like, you know, just choose or something. It's like, well, and then like, say you do choose and it's like, okay, so I'm going to choose. Let's go to have Italian. Oh, I don't want Italian. It's like, see now.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
You set me up.
Because now I've decided when you said, you know, for me to choose. So I chose something. And then you said that choice was not okay. Now it's like, okay, that's a problem. And I think that's where people miss it with communication of not understanding that piece.
Right. Because when we don't know what we want and then we put the ball in someone else's court, can we just go along with it? Can we be fluid and flexible and then think, in the future, I'm going to note to myself that I don't like Italian and I will bring this up next time. Or is it like now a fight? Is it now something we've now created meta messages about they don't listen to me and they didn't wait for me and, you know, whatever.
And it's the thing, like, I don't think people think about the consequences of like their words. And I don't mean consequences like, is, you know, because consequences can be bad or negative. And like when you say something like, well, you choose. When you said that, you've given license to the other person. Like, you didn't say, oh, well, you choose, but choose something I want. Like, that's
right. That's right. What you did, but mind read my brain, which doesn't know what it actually wants and solve this equation. That's a trap. That's not going to work.
If that's what you're asking, you've got to like say that thing, right? Like add that extra statement because that's how you're grading the other person. Like, oh, you choose. And then if you're wanting them to choose something you want, then say, well, choose and I'll let you know if that's something I like or like, you know what I mean? Like you got to give a little bit more.
You choose something you think I would like. I mean, at least give them some parameters.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing. Like, you're getting graded on a part of the test you didn't know because you said I could do anything.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you pancakes it is. I don't want that for dinner. Like, oh, well, you said anything.
That.
You said anything.
And it goes back to the Four Agreements, that book that says be impeccable with your word, which means when you say something, can you stick to what you just said? Like, and that makes you, if you think about that concept, it would make you pause before you said more stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. You're exactly right. And that's the slowdown I'm talking about, is that take some time to think about the message you are delivering. And again, not so much that you can't speak or that communicating becomes so laborious that you don't want to engage in it, but enough to say, on this first kind of iteration of this conversation, am I being as clear as I want to be? So, like, you know, think about it as drawing a picture. It's, is this first draft of this picture close enough that somebody could start guessing in the realm
can
of
approximate
what I'm trying to draw? Yeah, exactly.
That it's like a sun at the beach or whatever.
Yeah. As opposed to like, well, is this a person sitting in a chair? Or like, what are you trying to draw? Like, you know, it's like,
is it so abstract that it's open to interpretation? In which case, be aware that people may interpret it in a negative way.
and that's why like I love when I watch like adults operate with kids, because they do all the things with kids that they ought to do with other adults. And
that's
don't.
True.
It's
that's
something
true.
Like we age out of compassion for some reason. Like when it comes to being a human being, like if it were a little kid drawing a picture, like, oh, what is that right there? Is that a sun? That's a nice sun. Like, why aren't we doing that with it? Like, somebody's drawing a picture. Well, what is that? It's like, oh, that like we decide what it is. And like, oh, that person can't draw. They aren't.
Why did they draw me in this way? I don't like it. Yeah, we automatically are so harsh on people when they turn to adults. But as kids, we give them a pass and we learn to use gentle words because we learn right away that harsh words don't get the reaction we want from kids.
And they're harmful, right? But also, it doesn't change as we become adults. Words can hurt. I know people say like sticks and stones, you know, but words matter. Words hurt too.
Yeah. Yeah. We may not be throwing tantrums on the floor like we do when we were little, but we're internalizing it and it's getting into our self-esteem and our confidence and our willingness to want to do things with other people.
100%,
right.
100%. And then if I think that, like, you know, you're going to judge me negatively or you don't have much nice to say about me or what I do, then I disengage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they'll probably get upset about that too.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
You see that a lot in the workplace, like when employees aren't kind of like praised for their efforts or, you know, their contributions aren't really acknowledged or validated. And you see them kind of disengaged. But when they disengage, people notice. And then they get talked about or deemed for that. And it's like, well, you had all this opportunity when they were going above and beyond and wanted to be super proactive and you didn't like foster that.
Yeah. Yeah. You just expected it of them to go above and beyond. And now they're pulling back to a normal level and it's negative. Right.
Which makes me think, like, when you hear people say, well, I don't need to hear I'm doing a good job. Like, I never believe that. Like, how do you feel about that?
Right. Right. Yeah. Praise always works better to motivate people than criticism. I don't know why this is so hard to understand, especially in a work setting. Yeah. Right. Like, it's free. Compliments are free. Just give people compliments.
They are free. Yeah,
it's going to help. It's not going to be a bad thing. Like, everybody wants compliments. Everybody wants praise. So a takeaway from this conversation is to think about the concept of being more impeccable with your word. Have some kind of filter that you ask yourself maybe before you phrase something. Can I phrase this in a gentler way? Is this going to give me the reaction I want? Or is there a different way I can go about saying this? And to pull back a little more when you're caught up in a communication dynamic that you don't like and think about shifting it. You know, it's not always on you to shift, but the more we can become more aware of it, the more we can stop playing into patterns that aren't helping us.
I like it. That was a really succinct explanation of everything.
Oh, thank you. So thanks so much, Stevan, for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
If you're enjoying tools discussed on the show, please visit risawilliams.com and click on podcast. There you can learn about books, upcoming episodes, and future special segments of the show. You can also follow me at Risa Williams Therapy for contests and book giveaways. I'm Risa Williams, and we're out of time. Thanks for listening.